Much for staying. I know it's late, and I'm not going to talk for too long. But and I don't have much of a PowerPoint because I knew it was going to be 4:30, and probably you've seen a million of them today. And I just want to hit on a few things because I don't know how much people know about immigration detention compared to a lot of what we talk about in corrections. I don't want to say it's a small subset, but it's very different. So what I want to really get across is the unique problems of medical care and the oversight mechanisms that our office is using to try to make sure that medical care is appropriate. And I am not I'm not a medical professional, I am an attorney, so obviously that changes what I do a lot. The first thing I just want to say is immigration detention isn't the same as criminal detention, and it's civil detention. Now, what that means, the courts have said have given us some guidance, but they haven't given us a lot of guidance for immigration detainees. So what's important to take away is it's not the Eighth Amendment, cruel and unusual punishment. It's typically the Fifth Amendment, which is a due process clause, and these are people who have violated typically the Immigration and Nationality Act. So they wind up in detention, but they have probably, if they had a criminal sentence, they've already served it. And also, they might not have any criminal history, meaning they have not committed any crimes against the criminal code. So they could have entered illegally, they could be at a port of entry, they don't have documents, but it is somewhat of a different situation. And in 2009, the Secretary announced that we were going to move towards civil detention and detention reform. What that means is looking at what we should do with the 30,000 immigration detainees that are in immigration custody at one time. And so I'm going to talk about where they're detained, sort of moves that we've made to make that detention what we would call civil detention, and I'll discuss civil detention a little bit. But why I don't have a lot of answers for you is a lot of this is new. We haven't really, there is no civil detention model out there that we can per se use. We can look at models and see maybe what works. Also, I'm not from ICE, so I don't have the decision-making authority. Civil rights and civil liberties, we try to, I would say, work with ICE to get, I think, what we think is a good system. So I think What the Secretary, the couple things I do want to point out is that the priority is to detain criminal aliens. What that means is somebody who actually has committed a crime and also then is illegal. So those detained without concerns over their criminality, their hope is that they'll be in a less jail-like setting. Right now, many immigration detainees are held in jails, in prisons throughout the United States. And so what I want to talk about is what that means for medical care and how medical care access can be impacted by that. So I think the first important thing is the barriers to immigration detention. And I do investigations, and I go to detention facilities, and I have complaints that deal with various issues with medical care. These are some of the big issues we find, I think, that are really unique to immigration detention. Language. You're not going to find many people that are fluent in English or that speak English at all. Some will, particularly those that might have been here for a long time, had a green card, or that have been in the criminal justice system. But you have people who just came here, who have never been to the United States. They might be asking for asylum, and they're not going to know the language. And that does pose problems. Cultural issues. What is sickness? What is mental health? Someone suffering from a clear mental health problem doesn't understand what that is, or culturally it is not accepted for them to talk about it. So we see that quite a bit. Potential asylees. You have somebody who comes to this country and they don't trust the government because they've just fled a government that's been persecuting them. So it's very hard for us to expect that they'll come to this country and tell people they're sick or that they need something because they don't know what's going to happen to them. And again, with civil detention reform, the hope is we're not going to be detaining as many asylee seekers because they wouldn't necessarily be criminal, but it's something we need to talk about because it's likely they will be detained for some time. Legal access. You don't have a right to representation when you're in immigration proceedings. So that lifeline that might be in the criminal system, you don't have. A lot of people are pro se, and they're not going to have that tie to the outside community, potentially, which a lawyer might provide. And then I want to talk about transfer. People are transferred a lot in immigration custody. They might be transferred to be staged for removal from the country. They might also be transferred because they're caught at the border and there's not space for them. The typical immigration stay is not long. It's usually under 30 days. However, there are people in immigration detention that spend a significant amount of time, a year or more in detention. So it's something we need to talk about with medical care. And there's two things I want to hit upon with the structure. And I think this is very unique to the immigration system and does pose problems for medical access. You have immigration detainees that wind up in facilities run by DHS, but they have a large population, but not a huge amount of immigrants wind up in them. And they will receive health care from what was called the Division of Immigration Health Services, and is now has been changed to the Immigration Service Health Corps. However, then there are contract facilities that have contract facilities and often have contract health programs that will be in there, similar to jails. But they have a little more oversight. They usually have ICE present there, or they'll have immigration there. And then you have what's called an IGSA, and they are jails and prisons. They can be county, they can be local. So as we get further away, it's possible that the medical access received is going to be different. And then I also want to talk about the standards. The national detention standards are what currently cover immigration care. So when you're looking, even though we look towards the ACA and the NCCHC, right now we have standards that have just been revised. So I want to point out that if there's any time that we're going to see things move forward, it's going to be now. But right now, the national detention standards cover those. And that's really its own set of standards. And it's not necessarily the most comprehensive set of standards, although it has just been greatly approved. So what I want to talk about today, because I wouldn't be qualified really to talk about the ins and outs of the standards, though I'll talk about them briefly, is what we do to make sure that we are overseeing this. And this is for us in our office, and then what there is in ICE, the Immigration Customs Enforcement, which is going to the people holding immigration detainees. And what we do in our office is actually take complaints. If somebody in immigration detention says they're not getting access to medical care, then we actually will go and investigate that. We have jurisdiction to do so, and we go out. We also, if someone is sick or says they have significant problems in detention, we immediately go to Immigration Customs Enforcement and tell them. And I just want to tell you, for us, we investigated 191 complaints total, and 61 of those were dealing with conditions of detention. And those 61, probably a good group of those dealt with medical conditions of detention. It's not a large number, but what we do when we go there is we use subject matter experts. We actually have doctors, nurses, mental health experts that go out and review a facility for us, look at what the detainees are receiving, and from that, we give recommendations to the head of the component. We also do follow-up on our recommendations. For example, if we have a recommendation for training, if we have a recommendation for policy changes, we track those recommendations now and make sure that they are implemented. Another thing we deal with are deaths in detention. I'm sure many of you have heard about immigration detainees dying in detention. We take it very seriously, and there's recently been a change where our office is actively working to be a part of death reviews, use our subject matter expertise, and actually look at what happens with each individual death, whether it's from natural causes or whether we have to look further at that. And then we've also recently held a civil detention and mental health forum where we've brought experts together to talk from the community, the NGO, and we've brought NGOs together and government and sort of said, let's just take our personal differences aside, and let's talk about what we'd like to see for civil detention. Let's talk about what we'd like to see to improve mental health access in detention, and both of those were pretty successful. So that's what our office is doing right now. We're about 100 people, I should say. We're very small. So what we can do is somewhat limited by our resources. The other thing I want to talk about is the Office of Detention Oversight. They are part of ICE. And they actually also do investigations on conditions of detention. They do some of our investigations. And they are specifically created to look at conditions of detention. and they will do medical reviews of facilities. So, and the third, which I think is probably the next most important, is the ICE Office of Detention Policy and Planning. And that is where civil detention reform is really taking root. And what you would see, all those national detention standards have been updated. They are not out yet, but we have spent a lot of time working on the redo of the performance of the national detention standards. We've made some major changes to medical care. We have a new medical care standard for women with access to more structured screenings. We will see screenings happen sooner in the system so that we won't see people fall through the cracks, which again is hard when you have people who are here potentially for a week or 2 weeks and then might be removed. We might see the removal canceled too. So you've also got the problem of when are they going to be removed? They're in proceedings and things happening very fast and changing very fast. So what we're trying to do is implement actually more screenings, and we're also working on a medical classification system so that when someone comes into custody, they are immediately classified. And that's similar to what the Bureau of Prisons does. And that from that immediate medical classification, we know where they are. Are they a chronic care person? Are they an acute care person? Are they having, you know, suicidality? Are they having a mental health problem? And we can actually get them services quicker. We've also added more inclusive mental health services, and we've also included what we call language access. So now, this should be done in the language, obviously, of the person who is sick or needs assistance. The other thing for training, ICE has put service managers in many of their facilities, and they literally go through weekly and monthly to look at what's happening, and they look and make sure that the medical standard is being, that they don't see any problems with how it's being implemented in the facility. And that's huge. You actually have someone there on site who's been trained. My office trained some of the DSMs, I would say about half of them, on cultural sensitivity, mental health issues, sort of all the civil rights issues involved when you're dealing with an immigrant population. We also talked about the stress of special management units and all sorts of issues that you would see that I talked about with the barriers. So we went out, we actually went to San Antonio and discussed that. And the last thing I want to talk about, a couple things we're doing. We're changing worksheets that presently assess the facilities so that they all make sense and that everyone's looking and is on the same page. So those worksheets will be redone. And then I'm calling my, apparently it's me, so I should be the one to turn off. Thank you. I have a feeling that would work.
Enjoy the
I know.
I'm going to turn it off.
Yeah, I might have to call
it's
back.
Locked. It's got passwords on it.
Yes. And the last thing is we're looking at the covered services package. We're looking at sort of what services we provide and making that more robust. So I don't know if that gives you a great sense, but I guess what I want to leave you with is that unlike Scotland, we don't have a very comprehensive system for immigration detainees. However, they are being detained, and we're looking very hard at DHS and how we monitor the access to medical care. And these three places all have mechanisms to do that. And I think you're going to see it growing over the next 5 to 10 years. I mean, the hope is to make this a system that is more inclusive, that has better standards, and that has better oversight. And the fact that you have really three entities always looking over things is pretty substantial when you're looking at a population of about 30,000 on any given day. And so the last thing I want to say is sort of what we're going to do at CRCL. We'll continue to work on policy. We'll continue to look at the standards, and basically, we want to see that civil rights are protected, medical access is protected, and particularly in the areas of mental health, transgender, some of our issues, special management units that are used when people are mentally ill, Those types of issues we will continue to move forward on. Implementation assistance. When the new standards come out, we will be there to try to help implement them. Training. We will continue to give training to people on how to use the standards and how to be sensitive to special immigration populations. And then we'll continue to investigate ICE, which coming from ICE was not the most, didn't make me the most popular with people I worked with. But it's really important that we have an unbiased oversight mechanism that looks at immigration and customs enforcement within DHS. They need to be accountable, and they've actually been very welcoming to having us look at them, and that collaboration has actually grown substantially over the last year, so I think we'll keep seeing that. So again, it's not necessarily, it's very hard to analogize this exactly to the correctional population. However, it's hard not to, and I think that what makes it so hard. And what I wanted to sort of leave with was, instead of saying it in the beginning, is sort of the mission of our office. And I think this kind of speaks to the problems with access to medical care or all sorts of things, is that the mission of our office is to secure the nation while preserving individual liberty, fairness, and equality under the law. That's a hard mission. We want to protect the country, and we want to preserve equality and fairness. And our office rewrote this. I think it's an excellent restatement of our mission. So what I hope to leave you with is, when you talk about immigration detention, when there are deaths in detention, to realize that we sort of have a dual mission, and we're working very hard to make steps towards making civil rights a huge part of the culture, and I see it changing. However, because it's a law enforcement agency, we are always working to make sure that that stays in place as well. So it's not an easy mission for our office. So when you see slow progress, keep that under advisement. And hopefully you've seen that some of the big steps that we've done will make a change in the future. I think medical access and the civil detention reform will make a huge difference in what we see in the immigration detention population. So thank you very much. Thank you.